Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Josh and Lucas, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by our supporting partners, NHI, RCARE, NRC Health, TSO Life, Erdman, and Sherpa. View more and check out all things Bridge the Gap on our new website, btgvoice.com.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap podcast with Josh and Lucas. We are continuing our interview series here at ASHA in California. The sun is out. It's been a great day, and we've got a great guest on the show today, Kevin McMean, the president at MidCap Financial. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you. Great to be here. Awesome to have you on the show.
And Kevin, you live in Chicago where it's like negative 800.
Maybe not 800, but it's darn cold.
Let's I think put our it that way. 20-year record or something like that.
That could be, you know, they were talking about maybe breaking the record last night, and I didn't follow up to find out for sure, but it was going to be wind chills in the negative 50 range.
Yeah, so California's been welcome for you, right?
It's a nice break, but I will say my family was not very happy to hear
that
I was coming out in the sun.
Yeah, don't be sending pictures of the sun and the beach and stuff. Yeah.
No pictures while playing golf yesterday. No pictures of the sunshine and the ocean. Absolutely.
We're suffering, working so hard.
Yes, absolutely.
Kevin, you are a longstanding figure in seniors housing, and we'd love to get more of your background to see how you got to this point.
Yeah, so I've been in the business since about 1998, I think it was, so about 21 years. Actually got into it because I was at a company called Heller Financial. The group that I was in was wound down, and I had three opportunities that were available to me. And Ray Lewis, who was the chief investment officer at Ventas, was my boss, was starting a senior housing business within Heller at the time. And it just sounded like such a great opportunity. Long term, I was like, yeah, I can do this. We'll like start this business up within Heller, and then, you know, there's all kinds of opportunity over the long haul. So I got started in it and stayed at Heller, and then GE acquired us. I stayed there for a while, went off to Merrill Lynch Capital, where a bunch of Heller people went, was there for a few years, and then that got sold back to GE and started MidCap. So, you know, here I am, still doing senior housing, and it's been absolutely fantastic.
So you've seen a lot of these cycles that go up and down and back and forth, and you moderated a panel today of great thought leaders talking about capital markets.
Yep.
Talk to us about some takeaways from the themes today.
Well, I think a few different takeaways. So first of all, it's we're at a point where maybe there's, I wouldn't say an inflection point, but people are kind of staring at, you know, there could be an inflection point with the economy and some of the fundamentals in the industry, that sort of thing. So that's one, and what the implications of that are. Another is the, you know, it's a complex business, right? It's operations, it's healthcare, it's hospitality, it's real estate, all those different things, and that creates a lot of challenges for investors in the sector and lenders in the sector, so capital providers in general. So, you know, those I think were probably the two, you know, most significant takeaways. And then, you know, just a lot of good dialogue around how do the different capital providers think about all these things that are swirling around out there at this point in time, and, you know, what's the outlook going forward? And so it was some great conversation for sure. Mm-hmm.
So talk to me a little bit. Let's dive into, at least, I know we don't have a lot of time, but let's dive into a couple of those themes and those takeaways. You know, we talked about this, maybe this inflection point in the industry, the complexity. You know, I think we could go a thousand different ways on this, but, you know, forecast with the complexity, and we're at this point that, is this a pivotal point in the industry? Are things radically about to change? Are they not? You know, who is going to be positioned, if you're trying to position yourself for what's next, what are the ingredients to make a winner for what's next that you see coming?
So, first of all, I'd say, obviously the future's unknown. Nobody knows what's going to happen. And we're not in a situation where, you know, people have a lot of concern about what's next. I think they're just more aware of it and more sensitive to it and thinking about it around, like, how should I be positioned? So if you look at it from that standpoint, I think the people who will be best positioned for success are the folks that are well capitalized and can deal with a downturn in the industry, whatever that may entail, whether it's economically driven by the general economy, whether it's more development that takes place that pushes occupancies down, threatens the ability to, you know, generate the NOI that you need, all those kinds of things. So well capitalized, and then you got to be a really good operator to manage through, because it's such a difficult environment, not only with those, you know, occupancy challenges that everybody faces, but also the challenges with wages, with, you know, regulatory issues. I mean, there's some states now that we think of as a lender, you know, whether or not we really want to lend in those states, because the regulators are really tough on some of these operators. So, you know, that's a challenge. And you've got, you know, just all this host of things that these operators have to, you know, figure out. So if you've got a good operator with a great team, you know, that's a recipe for success going forward.
Right, right. Well, that's a great transition into the operator topic. That was something that came up, the war for talent, the war for talented operators. It seems to be a big component of success or fail.
You know, it's interesting that that comes up on a capital markets panel, right? I mean, everyone should be talking about interest rates and, you know, equity and returns and all that kind of stuff. And the reality is that the sophisticated capital providers in the sector understand all of the, you know, the operating nuances and the challenges that go with that. And, you know, these are people who have got a lot of experience in the marketplace. I mean, if you look at the group that was up there on the panel, they collectively probably had, you know, 80 years of experience, right? So they've been through cycles. They recognize what it takes. So an incredibly important aspect of what it takes to be successful is having really talented people. And that's, you know, up and down the line. You're an operator, right? So you know that, you know, it's tough to keep people when they've got a very demanding job dealing with, you know, seniors who are frail and need a lot of care. It's emotionally demanding. It's physically demanding at different times. And, you know, they don't get paid a lot. And, you know, they're struggling to make ends meet. So you got to find a way to engage those employees, make it more of, you know, a mission for them, make it something that is more enjoyable for them and not something that they're just coming in and punching the clock for and thinking about, like, well, where's the next dollar coming from to, you know, could I go over to FedEx or go over to, you know, the Amazon fulfillment center and get paid more there? And that is that what I want to do? Or is being in senior housing more fulfilling because I've got a management company that treats me with respect, you know, provides, you know, all these different things that help me make my life easier, that, you know, that extra dollar doesn't make that much of a difference because of all these other things. So that's important at that lower level. And then at the higher level, it's, you know, finding the right people who can actually run a business, right? I mean, each of these buildings is a business, and some of them are, you know, a meaningful business. I mean, you can have $5, $6, $7 million of cash flow off of one building if it's a pretty good sized building. So you've got to have a person who's really talented at, you know, running that from a marketing standpoint, from a staffing perspective, you know, figuring out what's the right way to, you know, deal with, you know, all of the different financial aspects of, you know, the day-to-day operations, right? The procurement side of things. So, you know, for a capital markets panel to be talking about that stuff, I think is reflective of how important that aspect of the business is to creating value and getting people comfortable that, you know, it's a good investment decision.
Yeah, so I totally agree. And it was so interesting. Something else that was really interesting, Lucas, I walked in, didn't catch the very beginning of the panel, but I walked in and when you guys were doing what I call basically a data dump, I mean, like going reviewing the capital markets. And I remember walking in on the part where you guys were talking about the trends in occupancy and how that's trending down and putting pressures on revenues. And then you went and talked about expenses and how the labor, I think the unemployment, did I hear a 50-year low? Unemployment record? Is that what I heard?
Close to a 50-year low, yeah. I think the last time it was as low as it is was 1968.
Yeah, so basically, you know, talking about how that's putting some pressure and some other things on the expense line, and that's crunching the NOI and things like that. And so it was kind of, I walked in and I was kind of like, oh, this is kind of heavy, you know, in here. Like, I'm an operator. I need to walk back out of this room. But then, so we were also heard a conflicting kind of argument going on that some people were saying, hey, well, in spite of that data, some of these markets that we're hearing, oh, don't go to this market or don't go to this, there's some operators experiencing some all-time highs on things. What were some of the takeaways, and do you have some insight on why are they winning in some of these tough markets when other people are really struggling? And what are some of the secrets or the takeaways and trends that we're seeing is differentiating those people from being successful and kind of beating these trending numbers?
Yeah, it's a great question. So obviously, you know, the data, I shouldn't say obviously, but the data that we talked about was national in scope, right? Mm-hmm. So if you look at the data, you know, down to the market, the sub-market, there's a whole lot of variability there that is, you know, very different from what you see at the national level. So you can go into a specific market and you can see that here's an asset that's really well located, right? There's great demographics all around. There's limited amount of competition, and it's very difficult to build there. So you start with a great real estate asset, and then you layer on top of that a great management company, management team, not only in terms of the broader, hey, here's a, you know, Leisure Care, for example, Judy Marcheski was on there. They're a great management company. But not just that management company, but the people specifically at that property that can make or break, like we talked about, you know, that great executive director that's there. So you put those things together, that they're going to be the outlier, right? They're going to be the ones that perform really well because of that asset quality and the location and the, you know, the team that's there that's, you know, just performs at a notch above so many others. So, and then when you get away from that, you've got, you know, somebody that maybe built an asset that, you know, is not in a great location. It's tucked away. It's hard to find. Maybe it's designed in a way that's not ideal in terms of being able to deliver services. All those different kinds of factors. And then if they're not as strong from a operating standpoint, those are the ones that really suffer and pull down those averages overall. So you can find, you know, pockets of great performance within markets that look terrible on a broad perspective, but really perform well when you nail it down or go down to a pinpoint level.
So is one of the takeaways there that as the capital markets are looking where they're going to invest, is the indicator there that they're following and joining up and putting much more of a weighted weight on the operator than just the raw data from the market? You know, used to, if you had a good feasibility study from a reputable company, it's kind of like, check that box, management company in place, let's rock and roll.
Yep.
How is that dynamic changing?
Well, I think that, you know, the panel is a little skewed in the sense that the people who are up there, you know, have a lot of experience and have been through different cycles. So they recognize the value of, you know, the operations. And I think you heard from each of them that operations is the first thing that we look at in terms of, you know, the equity provider, the debt provider that were up there. And, you know, there's a reason for that, right? Because they recognize that that's so important. So they're very focused on that. And I'm losing my train of thought in terms of what the original question was. So stop. Well, let's stop there and make sure that I'm on the right path.
You're on the right track, because I think, you know, originally it seems like based on the complexity that we've talked about, that no longer can you just really have a feasibility study that's based on big numbers. And it seems like there's being more and more pressure put on the development team to be partnered with the right operator that understands that market, that can be that kind of ace in the hole, so to speak, that wild card. It seems like that there's been a big shift in that.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, to the point that the more sophisticated lenders, equity investors recognize the importance of that. Where you see the support for the more, you know, marginal operators, the sites that are not as good, that might be from capital providers that are either, one, inexperienced, or look at it and say, you know what, I'm lending or I'm investing in this asset at a level in terms of my dollar per unit, that I'm not going to get hurt. I may suffer by virtue of not having a great operator, but I can ultimately replace them. And I'm confident that I could sell this and sell the dream, so to speak, to somebody else who would bring in a new, you know, whole set of capital and a new operator and feel like, hey, I'm getting this at a good price and I can get out. So, you know, you've got two dynamics that support maybe some of those more marginal situations. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, the inexperienced capital providers, and then it's maybe more experienced capital providers, but they're just in it at the right basis. They know, you know, where the break point is between I don't want to be in this because I'm really at risk of losing money, or, and being in a level where I'm confident I'm not going to lose money, or the likelihood is very low. Maybe that's the better expression.
Let's talk about 2019. Buyer's market or seller's market?
Well, I think that if you, you know, if you listen to the capital providers, the view is that we're maybe at a point where we're going to transition from a seller's market to a buyer's market. You know, I think there are some comments that you're starting to see a little bit more of a gap start to develop. Maybe not in every case, but certainly more frequent. And I think that in light of some of the challenges around, you know, margin compression and, you know, the, you know, the occupancy challenges in different markets that are helping drive that margin compression, you will start to see the investors and new capital providers coming in saying, or buyers, I guess, saying, I'm willing to pay for your asset, but I'm only willing to pay this much. And your expectation based on things that happened a year ago or 2 years ago aren't realistic anymore in the environment that we're in, right? With a more challenging operating environment, maybe a rising interest rate environment. So all those things conspire to maybe drive us closer to a buyer's market than a seller's market.
Fascinating. So I'm not sure if you talked about this because I had to skip out right at the end, but one of the trends that I've been seeing that has drastically changed since I first got in the industry, from a management company operating standpoint, almost every deal, whether it's an acquisition of an existing asset or whether it's new development, there seems to be an expectation from the operator, from the management company, to have skin in the game now, whereas that used to not, that wasn't even a topic. You were hired, it was fee for service, or you were just a seat at the table, help us with the pro forma, you take care of ops and marketing, run the thing. Well, now there's not a deal that comes to me as an experienced operator that I'm not expected to be part of that deal. What's some of that dynamic that has caused that to happen? And please validate that. Is that what you guys kind of have an expectation for generally?
Yeah, that's it's a great point. I mean, the third party manager is tough from a capital provider's perspective to get comfortable in different situations. I wouldn't say across the board that, you know, it's a bad situation. The more alignment you have, obviously, the better, right? Because if you've got capital invested in a particular deal that you could stand to lose if you don't perform, you're going to, your level of attention and focus is probably going to be higher there than another one where, hey, I just get a fee. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. I'm not losing any money. Maybe it hurts reputationally, but that your actions are a little bit different, you know, based on the impact on your pocketbook versus your reputation. Because a lot of people feel like you can work around the reputational challenge, right? Well, it wasn't the right asset. I didn't get support from, you know, the owner. They weren't investing in the asset. You can make up a story around that. So I think from a lot of capital providers' perspective, and I think this is probably, you know, in some respects, maybe even more true on the debt side than on the equity side, is that, you know, we love, and I'm a debt provider, we love having that alignment of interest. We want to know that that group is, that's operating this and making those day-to-day decisions, has got real skin in the game. Having said that, I know equity investors that, you know, they'll go either way. They're more than happy to have just, and some of them prefer to have just a fee manager in there, because if it doesn't work out, it's easier to unwind. It's easier to say, you know what, we've got a contract, there's a, you know, 60-day notice period or whatever it may be, I can do that versus, you know, I've got a management contract and they're an equity investor. How do I deal with that? It's a JV structure, whatever it may be. It's a very different dynamic. And, you know, there's no right or wrong, but I think if you were to poll people in the industry on the on equity or debt side, they would say, by far, we want equity alignment. So capital invested by that operator.
Makes total sense.
Yeah.
And that's been a big change. So one last thing, and then I know we got to wrap up here. So there was, and there is no way I can even probably explain this, but you'll know what I'm talking about because you led the panel. But there was some news. The trajectory of your conversation changed a little bit because of some Fed news yesterday, I believe. Was that correct? Explain that to those that maybe aren't up on the markets as much as you guys are and the potential ramifications of that.
Right. So the announcement yesterday from the Fed that they were taking a more dovish approach to interest rates. So not going and saying we're going to continually raise interest rates because of concerns about the economy, getting too hot, maybe inflation, that sort of thing. So pulling back a little bit. And that has, you know, people looking at interest rates maybe a little bit differently. So in interest rates, long-term interest rates are, you know, generally correlated with cap rates. So as interest rates go up on a long-term basis, cap rates go up. Cap rates are, you know, the way that you value an asset. So the higher the cap rate, the lower the value, right? Mm-hmm. As interest rates go down, cap rates compress with that, and typically your values go up. So the fact that the Fed is saying, we're not going to be as aggressive in raising interest rates, people are like, okay, different ball game now, right? So maybe that changes my outlook in terms of what I'm willing to pay because I know I can get debt that's long-term priced off of a 10-year treasury that's a little bit cheaper than I might have otherwise thought I would get when I close the transaction in whatever, 3-6 months. So that's, you know, what people were talking about. That was, I think, Beth Mace that brought that,
well,
that point up.
That was great timing for your panel to be here to address that. So
yeah.
Fascinating.
So I actually have one more thing. I'm not letting you go just yet.
Okay.
There's a phrase that you said, and I'm going to spin it a little bit, but you said the long term is filled with a bunch of short terms.
Yep.
And I see you, many people do, you're a servant leader in the business, and you actually mentor people in the business. And okay. So where you may have meant that for more market, we have a lot of younger listeners that mm-hmm. are getting in the business. There's entrepreneurs, there's frontline workers, there's partners to the industry that are building businesses through technology or whatever else,
right.
And they're getting in. Since you are involving yourself with younger people coming up in the business, I'd love to know your motivation behind that and then maybe some advice to young people that see senior living as a really great opportunity to build out a career.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that if you look at the industry, there's a little bit of a gap between people who started it and the people who are, you know, just kind of getting into it. And I one of the things that I had always talked about earlier in my career was, you know, you want to know that there's bench strength, right? So if something happens to the guy who started the business, do they have a strong enough management team overall to really support it and drive the culture and do the right things to make sure that they can continue to operate and perform well. And the way to do that is to have, you know, people who are well-trained, understand the business, and you're bringing in newer people into the industry. And, you know, the education of those people and the ability for them to, you know, to network with one another and create relationships that can turn into different business opportunities going forward, I think is great. And it adds some fresh blood, fresh perspective that, you know, might not otherwise be there and could, you know, develop some kind of game-changing type of ideas that would be very beneficial for the industry. So, you know, for me, it's important to do that. It's important to give back in a lot of ways just because, you know, I've been very fortunate to, you know, to get into the industry, not in the beginning by any means in 98. It had been around for, you know, well over 10, 15, 20 years, whatever it was. But, you know, relatively early in, you know, this asset class's development, And I've been a great beneficiary of that, which is terrific. And I think that it's important to give back, whether it's, you know, people at my company and having, you know, the right sort of, you know, training and benefits that they can get to, you know, learn and expand and grow, to, you know, people throughout the industry and some of the stuff that Ash is doing, that Nick is doing, you know, for, you know, networking opportunities and development opportunities and tapping the, you know, all the creativity of, you know, some of these, you know, really vibrant, really smart younger people. That's a great thing for the industry. So huge supporter of it.
Yeah. And I think it's great. I mean, the university outreach topic is definitely something our listeners are going to be hearing a lot more about this year.
Yep.
And this is, when we say it's a complex industry, we mean that we need all people with all types of skills. So if you're going to school and you're getting, you know, an MBA in finance or, you know, whatever you are, senior living should be on your list of industries for you to look into.
Right. No doubt. I mean, if you look at the industry, I mean, the amount of potential growth is staggering, right? With the demographics. If you understand that and can, you know, step back and either see it or have somebody explain to you the potential that that means, being with an operator, being with a capital provider that's focused in the sector, I mean, the opportunities are huge. So, you know, it's very important that this be on the radar for, you know, people in business, you know, architecture and, you know, hospitality, healthcare. I mean, there's a whole universe of people out there that can really, I think, come in and add a lot to this sector. And I think that, you know, the opportunities for them will be tremendous.
Josh, this has been a great conversation. I feel energized just talking about this. Great panel. Kevin, thank you for your time. If there's people out there that are listening to this, they say, wow, you know, how do I get connected to MidCap, or how do I get in contact with Kevin? This might be something that I want to get involved in. What would you say?
You can go on our website. We've got our contact information there. Give me a buzz. Shoot me an email. Happy to chat with people.
Excellent.
We'll obviously provide all that in our show notes as our audience is connecting with us.
That sounds great. And this has been another great episode of Bridge the Gap.
Next up for the BTG podcast team is Senior Living 100 Conference in March. We have an exciting lineup of guests covering a variety of topics. To learn more about this exclusive leadership conference, visit the tour page at btgvoice.com.